Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
All right, guys, this is Toby Mathis, and we're in for Tax Tuesday, joined by Jeff Webb.
Good to be here.
All right, so we have a fun Tax Tuesday in the middle of tax season. So, all right, so what do we got? We got Tax Tuesday rules. We got all sorts of fun stuff to do. We're going to make sure that we're jumping in to the questions that you guys emailed. If you ask long questions, send in via the Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com. If you need a very detailed response, you need to become a platinum or tax client. This is fun, fast, and educational, or fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. So we really want to just, you know, these are questions for not just your benefit, but for everybody's benefit. That's what we're looking at. Questions we're going to go over today, and I'm just going to start in on them. Man, we got a lot to go through, as always. But first question, bought my home in 1994, lived in it as a primary residence until 2012. It is now a second home. What are the rules for capital gains if I sell? Do I have to 1099 a hard money lender for interest payments? And how do I list shareholders on my form 1120 if I'm an LLC taxed as a C corp? And I'll explain. I'll break that one down. And then in a 501c3, that's a nonprofit charity, providing housing for veterans, can I still hold homes in a separate LLC under the nonprofit? So sounds like you have houses that you want to provide. We'll go over that. And then are RMDs added to adjusted gross income, and will they increase as I get older? So we're going to go through all those, plus a whole bunch that you got that you're asking. We'll get into all these fun ones. All right, so let's do the first one. I bought a home in 1994 and lived in it as a primary residence until 2012. It is now a second home, so it's not your primary residence. What are the rules for capital gains if I sell? What do you think there, Jeff?
Normally, we would want it to fall under the primary home exclusion, but that says you have to have lived in it for 2 out of the last 5 years, having been your primary home 2 of the last 5 years.
Yep.
And it fails in that test. So we really need to look at some other opportunities.
Yeah. So this is basically, if you had sold it in 2015, you'd have had a big old exclusion. You wouldn't have paid tax on the capital gains. Single, $250,000. Married, filing jointly, you would have had $500,000. But you waited too long.
Right.
So it's now just a regular old capital asset, and it's subject to long-term capital gains if you sell it. That's if you just sell it as is. So long-term capital gains will be either 0, 15%, or 20%, depending on how much you make, and could go as high as 23.8 if you have the net investment income tax.
Correct.
So what I would suggest, whenever I see this, I always look and see how much gain are we talking about. So if it's $100,000, then you're probably just going to sell it. You're not going to worry about it. But if it's a lot, then you either make sure that you're living in it for 2 of the last 5 years and then you sell it, or you convert it into an investment property. You put somebody in it and then you sell it under a 1031 exchange. You exchange it for more real estate. So if it's a second home and you're like, hey, you know, it's gone up a lot and hey, I'd like some rental properties, or I want to buy an apartment building or some condos or a mobile home, whatever. You could 1031 exchange that second home, but you have to make it into investment property. To make it into investment property, how long do you have to rent it for? 14 days?
Not very long. And really, in determining if it's investment property or not is what you're using it for.
Mm-hmm.
Using it as a second home may disqualify it. That may make it a personal.
Yeah, well, it's definitely right now as a second house, you have to convert it to an investment property.
Right.
The question is, I'm going to have to rent it to somebody. And then how long do I have to rent it for? And realistically, you could do that pretty quick. In fact, technically, you don't have to rent it. You just have to make it available for rental. But I think you'd probably get scrutinized.
Right.
If you don't have rent.
You really need to end personal use of that house.
I would make sure that I'm renting it probably for 6 months, and then I'd sell it under a 1031 exchange. The other thing you do, which one of my partner loves to do, it's Clint, is what we look at is, yeah, and somebody just asked, is an intent the key? Yes, you can prove the intent In other words, if I list that thing for to make it available as an investment property and I show that I listed it for 6 months and I could not find a renter, the market was just crud or whatever, and I did a good faith effort, maybe I took some applications in and just nobody qualified, and then I sold it, you'd win. It's an investment property, but you're probably going to get scrutinized because you don't have any income from it. So you can still win. It's just I try to avoid having the issue at all. But the other one you could do is you could sell it under installment sale to an S corp. Increase its basis. It's basically getting installment payments, which means part of it will be return of capital taxed at zero. Part of it's going to be capital gains taxed at 0, 15, or 20%, depending on your income. And part of it will be interest. And you spread that out. You could do that over 20 years. Right. And spread that puppy out and not get a big tax hit and step up the basis. And before everybody says, oh my God, he said real estate in an S corp. Yep, I sure did. This is one of the few times that I would do it. And what we're doing is we want a new basis so we can depreciate that thing. Or in the case of an S corp, like that's if you're going to keep it and rent it and you want to get some of the money out. So, you know, different strokes, different folks on this one. It really depends on how much there is. If it's a small amount, I wouldn't mess with any of it. If it's $200,000-$300,000, then now I'm going to do something to try to avoid the tax.
Yeah, a small amount, you're going to be subject to the long-term capital gains, and it's probably not going to be that much tax.
Yeah, and it depends on what your taxable income is. So if you're in the lower tax brackets, you don't really care. Like, yeah, I'll pay a little tax. C'est la vie. They always take a piece. All right. Second question, do I have to 1099 a hard money lender for interest payments?
Well, typically we're assuming hard money is for property, be considered a mortgage. And in that case, the hard money lender should be 1098. Can you say 1098-ing?
Yeah, 1098-ing the person who's
paying, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have to 1099 your hard money lender? No, you shouldn't. Here's another fun one. How do I list shareholder on my 1120 if I am an LLC taxed as a C corp? So I love this question from the fact that it lets me get on my soapbox and again gripe about the fact that people, especially professionals, don't understand what an LLC is. LLC is ignored for tax purposes. It's a creature of state law. So you say, hey, IRS, this is what I am. And so what you're really saying is, how do I list a shareholder on my 1120 if I am a C corp?
Right.
You just ignore the LLC and just remove it. And the answer is, you're going to list yourself as the shareholder because you're the owner. That's it.
That's it.
That was too easy. So, Jeff, unless you want to make it more difficult.
No, not today.
All right. I don't want to make it more difficult. I like easy. All right. What else we got? In a 501c3 providing housing for veterans. First off, thank you for doing that. Second off, 501c3s are awesome. Can I still hold homes in separate LLCs under the nonprofit? So I know this doesn't look like much of a tax question, but it's really important because what it shows is actually gives me an opportunity to add some color to this. First off, providing housing for veterans does not mean you need to own the house. You could actually go out there and just facilitate other homes and go out there and rent other houses and make them available to veterans at discounts or working with third parties. So just because your 501c3 is providing housing for veterans does not mean it needs to own the property. So you could actually own houses in a for-profit LLC and rent it to the 501c3. Or just give it to it if you really felt like it and say, hey, really what I'm doing is they would treat it as being rented and contributions to the 501c3 in the amount of the lease, of the fair market lease. So it's like you're not doing it any favors by saying it's zero. You would just say, hey, I'm going to charge you rent, and just you're treating it like you're giving it the rent. You know, it pays you and then you turn around and give it, which is perfectly fine. You can certainly do that. You could actually just charge it enough rent so that you're offsetting the depreciation. If it's below fair market value, then you'd have that same calculation where you'd say, hey, it's like the 501c3 paid you the difference between what you're charging it and the fair market value. And, you know, and you're making a contribution to the 501c3. The last one is kind of what's really your question is about, which is, hey, if my 501c3 buys properties or owns property or I give it a bunch of properties, can that 501c3 have LLCs underneath it? And the answer is yes. Because remember, LLCs don't exist to the IRS. We tell the IRS what it is. And so under those LLCs, we'd probably say ignore it and treat it as though it's in the 501c3. And that's exactly what it would be treated as. It would just be carried as an asset on the 501c3. And the LLCs would be set up and disregarded so that there's liability protection. Because believe it or not, you still have to be aware that even if your nonprofit owns a property, it can get sued just as easy as if it was in a for-profit.
So you would actually recommend that they do this if they're going to have multiple properties?
Yeah, you would absolutely. So if you're going to have multiple properties in an LLC or in a 501c3, isolate the property because you still have liability. In fact, that's one of the few ways to get that liability inside that, into that 501c3. Otherwise, 501c3s are awesome because they're right. Separate from you and nobody can take it away from you. Like, they can fight with you about it, but that's about it. You don't own it. That's why I love them. And you get a tax deduction for any money you put in. So if you're ever, like, this is one of the fun ones, is when somebody's flipping houses and giving it away, or flipping houses and giving it to a charity, or fixing it up, you know, for veterans or whatnot. I sometimes look at them and said, yeah, you know, you're never really going to get that money. It might be added to basis. So let's say I bought a house for 50, put 50 into it. Well, I can't write off the 50,000 I put into it, nor can I write off the $50,000 that I purchased. Those are both added to basis. So I have a $100,000 basis.
Right.
I'm much better off giving my 501c3 $100,000 and having it go out, and I get a full write off, let it go out and buy the property and fix it up. And you could do that inside of an LLC. So hopefully, I think I just heard the poosh of some brains popping. But yes, that's exactly what you can do. It's kind of fun. We're getting lots of questions. We'll get to you guys here. Are required minimum distributions added to adjusted gross income? Jeff, I'm sorry. I've been bombarding the whole show here.
No, it's fine. RMDs are calculated based on your age, or if you're married and have a spousal beneficiary, your age and your spouse's age. There's tables set up for it. The way these tables work is
they're expecting you to die. That's what they're doing. They're saying, here's how long you're going to last. It ends up being like, what, in the beginning it's 3 or 4% or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, and it goes up to, next thing you know, you're at 8 or 10%. Mm-hmm. But the way these tables are set up is if the amount in your retirement doesn't change and you're only taking distributions, you're going to get the same amount every year. However, if you're taking a distribution and then the next year your account's worth more, your RMD is going to be a little higher.
Yep, they
usually
are.
Usually not substantially more, but...
And how about, are they added to your adjusted gross income?
Yes, they are taxable as retirement income.
This stinks, right? Because then isn't that going to make you pay more on your Social Security?
Yes, it will.
Oh, that sucks. So what? You didn't get a deduction for your Social Security, and then you were smart enough to put money aside, and now you're going to end up getting hit with more taxes.
Yeah. Right? I had to explain that to my mother.
Right, your congressman. How was that? How was that explaining that to your mom?
I threatened to fire her.
Can't fire him. That's just mean.
I told her she might need to get another accountant. That it does happen. If you have unexpected income, whether it's the RMDs, typically it's not a lot. If it's $100,000 account balance, you're only going to see a distribution of $3,000 to $4,000.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, RMDs, here's the thing. It's required minimum distribution. So something to understand about RMDs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is that once you're 70 and a half, you can take the money out. If you need it, you can take more. And if you're in let's say you had a year where you just had a cruddy year or a bunch of losses or something, now it's time to take your RMD. The other thing you do with RMDs or anything like an IRA or 401k when you're taking out those required minimum distributions is you can contribute that to charity directly without having to recognize it as income first. It's literally just wash. So you don't have to worry about the 60%, right? You don't have to worry about 60%.
Right.
So you can just give your RMD directly to your charity and boom, now you're not forcing your Social Security to be more taxable.
Correct.
That one's free, folks. I just gave you that one. So stuff you didn't.
Oh, one other thing about the RMDs is if you do take a larger distribution in a year, that does not reduce your RMDs in future years.
Yeah.
And we've run across that with people mistakenly thought that.
And by the way, if you don't take your RMD, they tax you at 50% of whatever it would have been. Is there a way, someone just asked on this precise issue, is there a way to defer RMDs or pass it to my spouse?
You can defer your RMD in the very first year you turn 70 and a half. But then you end up having to take two RMDs in the following year.
Yeah. And then if you pass and it goes to your spouse, then they're taking it out. Then
they usually continue on whatever the RMD payout was.
All right. What is an RMD? All right. So let's say somebody's asking what is an RMD. It's a required minimum distribution from a deferred retirement account. So if you have an IRA or a 401k or a defined benefit plan and you put money in tax deferred now, in other words, I'm putting money in and I'm writing it off against my taxes. So I made, let's just use a defined benefit plan. I'm deferring $200,000 this year that I don't have to pay tax on. I'm going to eventually have to recognize that $200,000, but I'm doing it over a long period of time. And I have to start taking it when I hit 70 and a half. So that first year is going to be around 3 or 4%.
Right.
So if I have put 200,000 in and it grows at a reasonable rate of interest, whatever, and I end up with 220 in there, I'm going to end up taking probably $8,800 that. And so that's how it works. If we got a lot of RMD stuff now, all of a sudden I tell you guys what it is and I get 50 questions. All right. So do you have to get RMD from an annuity? No. You're basically looking at the beginning of the year, you're looking at the value of your account, your age, and you run that calculation. Can you describe getting an RMD from an inherited IRA? Oh, boy.
Those have completely different rules. If it's a spousal IRA, you usually continue whatever the spouse was doing. They can inherit it.
Right. So an inherited, so you're going to fall into two categories, spousal IRA or another inherited.
Right.
When it's your spouse, it's yours or the decedent's life expectancy. I believe you can actually stretch it out over yours.
I think so.
When it's an inherited IRA, and I'm going off of complete memory, guys, so don't shoot me on this. If I'm inheriting from somebody that wasn't my spouse, then it's going to be 5 years or the shorter of their life expectancy or my life expectancy. If it's me, if it's a trust, then it's the eldest beneficiary's life expectancy that they use for the required minimum distributions. So it gets a little complicated. Somebody says, I thought you didn't have to take an RMD from a Roth IRA. Do you want to handle
that? Well, Roth IRA is not a deferred retirement plan.
We never got a deduction going in.
And that's what deferred means. You're deferring income. You're not paying tax on it when you put the money in. Mm-hmm. So that's correct. A Roth IRA is not subject to RMDs.
All right. See? All right. So we're useful for something. Oh, boy. We got a lot of questions. But before we get into those questions, let's do a little bit of fun stuff. First off, if you like taxes and you want to learn more, come to TaxWise, or for this 197, that 197 gets you live streamed to all of our events this year. TaxWise is a 2-day tax course. I go over 30 plus specific strategies on tax. So if you like tax strategies and you want to learn a whole bunch, then you go to TaxWise. Ask anybody whether they liked it or not.
You know, all the clients I've talked to that have been to TaxWise have really enjoyed it.
It's one of those weird areas. Yeah, I know you're just fluffing me here.
No, I'm not fluffing.
We've been doing this a long time, so for over 20 years. But the people who spent more than about 10 hours made more than $10,000 in tax. That's how it works. If you spend a little bit of time on tax, you actually get a return. If you're not, then don't do it. You know, so you got to be making some money, though. If you're making $30,000 a year, there's not a lot I'm going to be able to show you from a tax standpoint. But if you're making $300,000 a year, every little bit. Let's see. Oh, Platinum Portal. That's you can ask any question to an attorney. You can ask questions to the accountants in writing. And it's $35 a month. And you can ask all the questions you want. You can get on the phone with us. And you get to attend. You're going to get 2 free tickets to any one of our main 4 events, which is I would encourage everybody to go to Tax and Asset Protection. And then there's a whole bunch of learning in there. All right. So you can ask your questions via Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com or visit us at Anderson Advisors. You can always go to our podcast. All right. That is enough of that. Now it's just questions, questions, questions. Somebody asked me to talk about opportunity zones. Yeah. So in a nutshell, all states designated something called a qualified opportunity zone, and the Treasury approved them. If you type in qualified opportunity zone heat map, you will see them. They're neighborhoods that are struggling. If you invest in those, you have to do so through a qualified opportunity zone fund or a qualified opportunity fund. That just is a fancy way of saying an LLC taxes a partnership, an LLC taxes a corporation, a partnership, or a corporation. Any of those will work, and you have to do a certification when you file a return for the qualified opportunity zone. We do set those up. Happy to do it. When you set up an opportunity zone fund, it has to put 90% of its money into or own 90% of its assets owned in qualified opportunity zones. That's why you have to look and see where they are. And what does that mean? It just means that you're helping out distressed areas by investing. And it could be a business, it could be real estate, et cetera. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. You can take any capital gains and defer it into an opportunity zone. So whereas I usually sell a piece of property and I can 1031 exchange it, or I sell my Bitcoin and I'm going to get nailed with tax, or I sell my second house. This is a good example because we had that gentleman. I sell my second house and normally I have to pay tax. If I put that into an opportunity zone, I'm deferring it for 7 years at this point. So I have to hold the opportunity zone property and I could defer that tax up to 7 years. And I'm only going to pay tax on 85% of it. So just the gain. So it kind of works like this. I sell a property. I have $1 million of capital gains. I put it in an opportunity zone. 7 years later, I'm recognizing instead of the million, I'm only recognizing $850,000 as long-term capital gains. But I do have to recognize it. Now, the opportunity zone investment, let's say I put all $1 million into the investment. If I hold that for 10 years, I will not have to pay tax on that. It'll be excluded, all of the gain. So I, again, go back to this. I put $1 million in. Let's say that I bought a half a million dollar piece of property, put $500,000 into it. So my basis is now $1 million. I have to recognize that $1 million investment, by the way, in year seven. I get to defer that for 7 years. And then let's say that property goes up to $5 million in 20 years and I sell it. I pay zero tax on that. That's the benefit of the opportunity zone. And I don't want to get too far into that. They're dang powerful, but it is, you know, I'd probably 1031 exchange if I'm doing real estate. All right. Let's see. My father was receiving payments from a trust before he passed. I am receiving those payments and I'm told that there will be dividing a distribution this month based on last year's income. Will I report all of the income and get all of the current distribution? Or will his distributions get taxed to me anyway, since I am his heir?
You will get a K-1 from the trustee of the trust that will tell you what you have to report as tax, because probably not all of that distribution is taxable. So it's a good idea to let the trustee tell you what is by giving you that K-1.
Yeah. And you're not going to be liable for the tax on the monies received from by your dad. Your dad will have to file a tax. I mean, I know your dad's passed, but you'd file a tax return for the decedent and a final tax return. And you'd include that portion of the trust income that was distributed to your father on his final return. And you would only report the portion that's to you. Fair?
Yep.
All right. Who can we open up an HSA account that allows us to invest the proceeds into alternative investments in real estate notes? Barry, I don't know. I believe that you'd have to go to just about any bank.
Yeah, I know Mellon does it and some of the other big banks do it.
It's different than a self-directed IRA. So I think you just go to any bank and I don't think they really care what you invest in, but I'm not the expert on those by any stretch. Have you ever heard of a deferred sales trust? Yes. Is it any good? It depends. So here's how it works. This is kind of fun. And Henry, that's a really good question. And I'll give you in a nutshell the situation which these happen. So mom and dad have business that they've been running for 25 years. And here comes along somebody says, I want to buy it out. The kids aren't really in the business. The kids are all doing something else. And they say, you know what? I don't want to pay tax on, you know, this business. Let's say it's $20 million. I don't want to pay tax on $20 million. I'll get killed in it. And so how do I keep from having to pay tax on this? How do I liquidate it? This, you fill in the blank. This could be real estate. This could be anything. And you just say, hey, I want to get out. I want to get the cash and I don't want to pay tax. So what you do is you set up a trust with the beneficiary being your children and you dropped the business into an LLC. This is really important actually, because we're going to have to step up the basis, but you drop it into an LLC and you sell it to this trust. That's why they call it a deferred sales trust. And the trust says, I'm going to defer this payment for 5, 6 years, 10, whatever the number is. And I'm going to start paying you, at which time I'm going to pay you back your basis, some capital gains, some interest. It's going to be a calculation. So depending on what your basis in the company is going to determine whether it's all capital gains. But this is where the secret is. Once I do that, I have just established a new value, the value of that company at the fair market value on that date I sell it to the trust. The trust elects to step up the basis in that underlying company or asset and then sells it. And when it sells it, you've now have a new basis. So if you sell it for the amount close to what you already just sold it to your deferred sales trust, there's no tax. So the only tax is actually what you receive as you're paying the installment note back to yourself. And so usually what you're doing is you sit with your accountant, you say, how much money do you need to have the rest of your life to make sure that you never run out? Some people put a skin on this, which is called a self-canceling installment note. But what you're doing is you're saying, hey, pay this out to me over the rest of my life, over a period of time, 20 years, 30 years. So something that you expect to live, by the way. Like if you're 90 and you put a 30-year payout, they're probably going to say no. But if you're 70, then yes, whatever my life expectancy is, reasonable period of time to where I expect to get paid back, I'm just spreading it out. And now I don't get killed in taxes. And I can sell it. Now there's a bunch of money in a trust. And guess what? I've just transferred out of my estate. Yay! Which is good for estate taxes. And that's when those are used. So do you want to add any on that?
No, I just know the first time I saw one of these documents for these sales trusts that I thought, what?
Yeah. There was a firm in Kansas City. This is really weird. So I had a friend, Teresa Fetty. She owned Provident Trust. And that's what she did in her firm in Kansas City. That's where they specialize. It was just funny. So I was like, wow, hey.
They read really strange.
They do read strange because you got to jump through some hoops and make sure. All right. Question one. My resident state is California. I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm just teasing. I formed an LLC in Indiana in 2018 and hold investment property. It has only expenses so far. Do I need to file an Indiana state tax return?
Oh, that depends on not the LLC, but how the LLC is being taxed.
Assume it's disregarded to Colin.
Assume it's disregarded to Colin, then you're going to report it. I like filing those state tax returns.
You're going to get nailed in California.
Yeah, you're going to get nailed in California, but I like filing those out-of-state tax returns so I can start capturing those losses for when I sell the property.
You can do that. And that you're trying to offset any state taxes. So it always depends on the state you're in and whether they have a tax. I don't think you actually have to file like a 1040 or anything like that in that state, unless Jeff makes you. Jeff, would you make them?
I would suggest it, yeah.
Okay.
And that's, it would really depend on what kind of expenses we're talking about. If they're substantial, I want to capture them.
All right. If I invested with online syndication platforms as a non-managing member in LLCs that own fractional equity interest in properties. Oh, my goodness. All right. So what this person is doing is they are investing with others. It's a syndication and they're investing. And these LLCs that they're investing in own properties in different states. Do you have to file state tax returns in those states? The answer is no. You're just getting a K-1 from these bad boys. So you should only have one relationship, and that's between you and the entity, which isn't doing all the investing, unless you think something else.
Nope.
Nope. So the answer is no. You don't have to worry about that. California is a community property state, but I formed a husband and wife multi-member LLC in Indiana, which is not a community property state. Which state's rules do I follow? Your state where you reside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you should not be filing a partnership return.
Yeah. California's rules are going to trump Indiana's non-community property rules.
Yep. I understand that in the first year of forming a company, we can write off $5,000 in startup costs. I have a husband and wife multi-member LLC that has 50-50 split. Can I only write off $2,500 per member? Hey, you brought up the full $5,000.
Yeah, the $5,000 is per entity, and it's both for startup costs and organization costs.
You can do both. In other words, this is really important what Jeff just said. Startup costs are going back in time and looking back. Organizational costs are the cost of setting up the LLC, paying an accountant, getting all the information, paying the lawyer, all that. You get both. So you actually have $10,000. My wife had a small business and her accountant didn't list each of my trades individually on Schedule D. Put a summary. She no longer has her business. So I will be doing my own taxes. Do I have to list each trade or can I do a summary?
If you have, if all of your transactions are covered transactions, they're being reported to you by the broker that they're covered and there's no adjustments to be made like wash sales, you don't have to report any of those individual transactions.
Yay. So Stephen, I hope that makes sense. You don't have to do it if the brokerage house is doing it, you don't have to do it. If you have some funky stuff like wash sales, then you would. Last time I asked a question about what need to do to get the 20% flow through LP as part of the new tax law. All right. 20% deduction is on qualified business income. It's 199A of the new tax laws. It's that the gift from Congress saying, hey, if you have certain types of income, then you get a 20% haircut. It has to be business income. So it's not capital gains, interest, dividends, things like that. Unless you get a dividend interest on REITs, right?
On REITs because it's considered ordinary income.
Yep. So really?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. I knew you got the 20%, but I thought you might be getting a.
No, it's not capital gain.
It's all ordinary income. So that's so you get a 20% haircut. So it's going to get you to the same place anyway, since depending on what your tax bracket is. Big changes that were recent, which was some regs on a safe harbor for real estate. If you're an investor in real estate, you still qualify for the 20%. You have the safe harbor where you have to group your residential properties separate from your commercial. You have to spend 250 hours on real estate. And if you can't, your agent, your employees, property manager, they have to, but they have to track their time to be in the safe harbor. It's really tough. Like, I hate safe harbors. I like them, but I hate them. I don't like this one just because it's creating so much administrative nightmare. You have to account for these things separately. And then nowhere do I see that you can write off under the 20% the triple net lease.
Nope.
All right. So there's a whole bunch out there on the 20% deduction. I could go on for an hour just on that thing.
I was thinking that very.
I'd go onto the internet, go into our YouTube channel, go into Anderson Advisors, go into a Platinum portal, and we'll have a whole bunch. I've done a bunch of webinars on it and recordings on it. All right. Can I take 179 on home office renovation? If no, how many years do you depreciate it? What about special depreciation? All right. So this is for the home office. Do you want to do this?
Well, it's going to depend first on what you're renovating. I'm assuming it's specifically for your office.
Yeah.
And whether it's just fixtures. I mean, if you throw desk in there and computers and all that, that's all going to be subject 179.
Yeah.
Paint, I would just put that off to repairs.
Well, you don't have to do it because you get a bonus depreciation nowadays. So you can just write it all off.
Tearing out walls and stuff like that.
So here's always the rule. If it's a direct expense, you write it off. And I would reimburse. So I'd actually have a business reimbursing you for it. It's a home office. It's going to be an administrative office in the home. I don't want to have tax hitting my personal return. I would have the corporation reimburse you as an office expense and leave it at that. Makes it so much simpler. But let's just say that 179 is equipment. So if I have, like Jeff said, furniture and computer, light switches, fixtures, display, yep, stuff like that, then I'd 179 it. Anything below that, I'd probably be doing bonus depreciation, carpet and paint, be bonus depreciating, and I'd just be reimbursing yourself. I wouldn't even play the let's write it off game.
Yeah, and like Toby said, you don't have to use 179 because bonus is going to accomplish the same thing, the special depreciation.
Yep, but that's going to go away in a couple of years, so like in 2023. My 22-year-old daughter is a senior in college. Congratulations. She earned $3,000 in 2018. She has no prior 401k or Roth. What is the max amount she can contribute to Roth for 2018? I would say $3,054. If so, would starting a Roth in 2018 be a problem for 2019? No, you can go do it right now. In fact, do it before you file your tax return.
Yeah, it's got to be made before April 15th.
Yes, and please do that. In fact, I tell this for anybody with kids that have any active income. Get them in a Roth IRA. This is going to sound weird coming from a guy who always tells people to do a 401k. This is the exception. Use a Roth IRA because worst case scenario, let's say she puts $3,054 in it and she needs $3,054 in 3 years, she can pull that out with no penalty.
Right.
You can always pull out what you put in. Now, if that $3,054 grows to $4,000, she shouldn't touch the amount that it grew because there'll be a tax implication on touching that. Make sense?
And after year five, she can even touch that.
Yeah, and after year five, she can take that and just pay the tax. What things can be listed as a liabilities for business? Wow, it's about 100 items. Any loans, anything you owe to a third party,
yeah,
anything you owe to a shareholder. Usually you're looking at long-term and short-term debts, so your credit cards, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, if you're cash basis, which most of our clients are, it's going to be money that you owe to other people.
Mm-hmm. All right, next one. If an individual owns a condo in a separate four-unit building, where should the owner live for maximum tax benefits? In the separate condo unit or in one unit in the four building? The only income is from the rentals. I don't think it's going to matter, but.
No, I don't either.
Are you renting the condo? That's the big question. Because if they're not going to rent the condo, then live in that. If you are going to rent the condo, then it's best use. I'd actually run the numbers and say, chances are you're going to be writing off. Let's say you lived in a four-unit building. You're writing off 3/4 of that building.
Yeah, we're going to carve out that one apartment that you're living in.
Yep. So it all depends on how much it's worth. So there's an, and it depends. It's not really going to matter, Lane. All right. How do I file my C-Corp on my taxes with a 50, how do I file my C-Corp with a 50-50 partnership when we didn't make any money because we didn't flip any houses yet? All right, so you have a 50-50 partnership and yours is a C-Corp. Well, the C-Corp's just going to file 1120 and probably just grab some expenses. If you didn't make any money yet, it's all going to be expenses. You just want to capture those. It's not going to give you really any benefit, but you want to capture them. If you have startup expenses or organizational expenses, we need to file that on the first return to grab those. So that's the big thing. And then when you make money, you'll just have losses to offset it. So you won't pay tax on it in the future. Is the corp as a holding corp only model still being used? Is the corp as a holding corp only model still being used? Think of using a strategy in your future. I'm not certain I understand.
Yeah. I mean, we do use the corporation for other things than just a holding corp. Flipping's one of those items. We use it as a management company.
Mm-hmm.
Probably less often do we use it as a holding corp.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm not sure I understand the color of the question. That's my problem. I had a REIT investment where they filed Chapter 11, where my investment was $50,000. Oh my goodness, how much of a loss can I claim per year?
Well, in year one, when you have a loss, you're going to claim the whole $50,000. But the biggest loss you'll be able to deduct per year is going to be $3,000.
Against your active income.
Right.
If you have other income, passive, like other, would it have to be, it wouldn't have to be REIT. It could be any passive income, right?
Well, in this case, he lost his investment, so that's going to be capital loss.
Capital loss. But if he has other investment gains, so if he sold a bunch of stock, maybe?
If he's got $50,000 of capital gain from selling Boeing or something.
Yeah. So here's how it worked, Mike. You got to have the same type of gain and to get that $50,000 loss. Otherwise, that $50,000 loss is passive loss, capital loss, I should say. Capital
loss. And it doesn't matter if it's short-term or long-term.
Right. And you're going to be carrying that. It offsets your W-2 income or your active income, $3,000 a year, and you carry it forward forever.
If you are a real estate investor, trader, or business owner who wants to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and build future wealth, then you need to attend the next 3-day tax and asset protection event sponsored by Anderson Business Advisors. At the event, podcast hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman will discuss the art of building generational wealth, ninja equity stripping strategies to discourage lawsuits, the reason to forget LLCs for real estate, tax strategies to stay out of the IRS crosshairs, avoid the joint venture chamber of horrors, and much more. The Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection event is held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Join us for the next 3-day tax and asset protection event and network with other investors and business owners while learning strategies to build your wealth and help you sleep better at night with a solid peace of mind knowing you have prepared for anything. Learn about the next event dates and locations by going to AndersonAP.com and register today. That's AndersonAP.com to register. AndersonAP.com.
Let's see. I currently own a home that I've been in for the past 5 years. I plan on buying another home in the next few months and consider just renting out my home to a family. I heard somewhere that it would be better to sell my home to an S-Corp and establish a new basis, which protects my $500,000. Oh, yeah. That's pretty smart.
Well, here's why you want to do this.
Yeah.
If you start renting out your home and you rent it for more than 5 years, you're going to lose your $500,000 exclusion.
You're going to lose it in just over 3 years. So you're going to have to have lived in it as your primary residence 2 of the last 5. So I love being nitpicky with Jeff because he's an accountant and he loves it.
So by selling to your S corporation,
you protect your 2 out of 5 years is met. You can offset, or you can basically exclude that capital gains. So if you're married, it's $500,000. That gets added into the basis of the property. So now you have a new basis. And here's why it's cool. Sell it and you have a new basis. Let's say you bought it for $250,000, sell it for $750,000. You're depreciating that $750,000,
right,
minus the land value. So whatever the land value, took that out. You're going to have a much bigger deduction. Now, here's the problem with an S-Corp. If you take it out, you pull it out, and you put that property in your name, you're going to have a huge tax hit at some point in the future. So you just got to be careful. You always want to talk to an accountant before you do anything with that property. But the benefit is so huge. Chances are you're not going to pay any tax on any of that. A, you're going to get a $500,000 tax exclusion. B, you're probably not going to pay tax on any of those rents for a long time. So that's what I'd probably do. I'd go calculate the heck out of it, make sure that you're not, if you're going to keep that thing, you may as well. Now, my investment period is forever. So I always tell people, what's your holding period? Forever. You know, and I don't want my kids to sell it or anything else. So S Corp is fine. If you're going to sell it, you're going to give it, you want to give it out to yourself at some point. Not fine. So we want to make sure what you plan to do with it. With the new Schedule A rules, I heard that since mortgage interest probably isn't usable for most of us, that HELOC interest is deductible elsewhere. Sheila. All right. So first off, mortgage interest is still deductible up to $750,000 of mortgage interest, so long as it's used for acquisition indebtedness, which means buying a house or improving a house that you live in.
And if you got an existing loan from before 18,
yeah, if you had
$1 million.
Yeah, if it was 2017, you had a loan, you're grandfathered into $1 million. So first off, there's that. Yes, it's under Schedule A, so you have to exceed the standard deduction, which for 2018, married filing jointly was $24,000. So a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not going to hit it. In fact, 10% of people are going to hit it. So yes, here's where you get to write it off. If you take the HELOC out, for example, and you buy a house with it, an investment property, you're going to write that off on Schedule E instead of on your Schedule A. Whereas it used to be, it didn't really matter. Now we're going to say, hey, this isn't acquisition indebtedness. It's investment indebtedness. We're going to offset the rents and things like that with it. Anything you want to throw?
No, just because it's secured by your primary residence doesn't mean that that can't be used for another business purpose.
Yep.
Or investment purpose.
When downsizing to another home and move into your rental, how long can you remain in rental, move into a new home and retain it as a rental? Oh man, you guys like to write some crazy stuff, right? When downsizing to another home and move into your rental. So it looks like, hey, I don't want my house. I want to rent, move into a rental property. How long can you remain in the rental, move into your new house and retain it as a rental?
And I think in this case, he's actually moving into his own rental property.
Yeah. So
you can stay there forever, but it's no longer a rental while you live there.
Right. But it doesn't trigger bad tax consequences.
Correct.
You know, bad tax consequences are usually lost. They're not so much that you move into it and trigger it. So, you know, is it a rental anymore? No, but so you're not going to get to take the depreciation. If you move into it, it's going to depend on that year, which one you use most. So they're probably going to just count days. And I mean, how would they do that? Because if you spent more than 14 days in it as a investment property, chances
right.
are it's going to be treated as an investment property. Would they split the year?
We probably split the interest between the mortgage or Schedule A mortgage and rental mortgage.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a calculation, but I wouldn't be worrying. Any changes in how donations charity are handled in 2019 compared to 2018? No, not really. They're the same rules. That 60% of adjusted gross income can be offset, still on your Schedule A, and it still freaks me out. I think that a lot of charities are going to be hurting because there's not a huge tax incentive to give to charity anymore because your Schedule A, I mean, you have such a high standard deduction. So, like, why do it? Let's see. Thank you for the webinar. I missed my last tax filing. I've been living outside the U.S. I have property in the U.S. I need to refinance, look better. I need to qualify for the loan. Do I file 2 years to comply with the bank? The answer is yes. So if you haven't filed your taxes, yes. Here's somebody asking, I don't know what that is. What is the tax law, regarding RMD with 13 years difference? Well, that's interesting. If you have somebody with a huge difference at RMD.
The RMD is probably going to be lower because you have a longer life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to stretch out how long your money's going to last you before you kick it.
Yeah. So it's basically, let's see, wife and the husband is 13 years younger or vice versa. They're asking about, it's going to be your RMD. If you inherit it, then it's going to be your RMD. Let's see. What is this person? I don't want to take the profit from a house. Can I transfer the house to another LLC and the other house can do the lending or funding? Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I can always borrow money on a piece of property without having to trigger a tax. Here's somebody making fun of me for being old. I'm not old.
You're not as old as I am.
At the recommendation of our advisor, we are opening an S-Corp in California. We also have some other entities, a couple of single member LLCs. Question is, are there any high-level directional suggestives for leveraging the scenario? And how these entities may or may not be related to each other. Yeah, absolutely. So we have a C Corp and an in-state S. So here's the big thing is if I have a out-of-state C Corp, I know that I'm being taxed at 21%, period. It's a C Corp. It's a flat. That's one of the beautiful benefits of the new tax laws. Versus anything that hits my return, I'm going to have to pay my personal tax bracket plus my state. So if you're in California, you're probably getting slaughtered in tax. You guys, it's like a 13% state plus the federal. So yeah, I'm moving money into the C Corp for sure. And the other thing is I'm using an accountable plan. I don't want to have to pay tax on anything that I don't need to. So I'm going to make sure that I'm not personally taking deductions. I'm going to make sure that my company is reimbursing me for just about everything and anything that I can get my hands on. Where do I write off fees for LLC state renewal and registered agent fees on my tax form?
There's a couple places you can do that. You can do it on the taxes and licenses line, or you can do it in other deductions. Just say that it's the state secretary of state fees or your registration fees, and there shouldn't be any issue.
All right. I bought a property with a loan in my name, just transferred the deed to my LLC. Who should pay the mortgage, the LLC or me? If the LLC doesn't have money, how should I handle it? Well, you give the money to the LLC and let it pay, but it's not catastrophic if you're paying it and the LLC doesn't have the money, if that is an LLC that flows to you. So remember, the IRS doesn't care what it is. They ignore the LLC. You tell it how it's being taxed. So unless it's an S Corp or a C Corp, then I have no problem. All right. Are there opportunity zone funds to invest in with similar tax deferral? Absolutely, Gene. That's what all these big brokerage houses are doing. They're rolling out the red carpet on these opportunity funds. Defer your money. My father immigrated here 35 years ago. He had a house back home where he used to live, which he sold. It wasn't an investment property. How do you treat the capital gain? If it's for your dad, he would just recognize it as long-term capital gains. It doesn't matter where it is, right?
No, if he sold it in another country, there may be taxes on that property, and you want to make sure you pick up those taxes on the U.S. return.
Mm-hmm.
You may get a credit for those.
My AGI is over $150,000. I can't write off my rental expenses. Do you have any suggestions on how to lower my AGI or AIG, probably AGI, without quitting my day job? Lawrence, you're asking a great question. So the reason that your rental expenses, you're phased out over the active amount, you're still going to get the 20% more than likely deduction off of that from that income that it passes down. The way to write off your adjusted gross income, there's a bunch of them. I just rattle off a few. Either you're if you're not married, then ignore this one. But if you have a spouse, make sure that they get certified as a, you know, or qualify as a real estate professional so that you can write off your expenses against your active income. The other thing is you can do things like conservation easements. You can do oil and gas. You can do other things that offset your income. Or you set up your own 501c3, dump a bunch of money into that. Or if you're just a giving person, skip the setting up yourself and just give it to a 501c3 charity, or set up a DAFI, a donor advised fund, and give lots of money periodically to it to lower your taxes. And before somebody says, you're crazy, why would I do that? You just say, hey, I'm running the numbers. I'm going to see whether or not I'm already going to be giving. Some people tithe and they get zero benefit from it. So I lump them into multiple years and say, give every 3 years instead of every year, but give three times the amount every third year, whatever it is, so I can actually write it off. So that's how you do it. Let's see. I hold a recreational property in an LLC. Can I claim special assessments for the property as a loss against sources of income outside the LLC? Sal, that depends on how that LLC is taxed. So we a lot of times we talk about the LLCs, and I'm assuming that this is a pass-through. If it's a pass-through, I know somebody says it. They think it depends. Well, you know, people are calling me on the depends stuff. I hate the word depends.
But some of these code sections are 70, 80, 90 pages long.
Yeah. And here's the thing is it depends on how it's taxed. If it's a C Corp, no. If it's an S Corp, no. If it's unless you have basis and you have loss, if it's special assessment, it's creating loss against your LLC, then it really depends on your income, whether you're phased out, whether you're an active participant, real estate professional, and other things. So we have to kind of go through a checklist. So the answer is yes, under certain circumstances. But rather than just say that, I'm going to say, we have to know your circumstance. On the form 5500, do you not need to file it if it is less than $250,000? Kim, if you have a retirement plan less than $250,000, married, filing jointly, you do not have to worry about it. How do you fund a newly created LLC, personal cash? Can you use a loan out of your solo 401k? Yes. Formed an LLC in Wyoming. You could do either one of those, by the way. Formed an LLC in Wyoming, taxed as a partnership, and have no activities or expense besides formation costs. Do I need to file? If it's taxed as a partnership, yeah, you're going to want that. It rolls down to you guys.
Right. The rules say you don't have to file a partnership return if there was no income or expenses to report.
Mm-hmm. I am a resident of California and have a property in Colorado under a California LLC. Don't do that. Do I have to prepare a tax return in Colorado and pay Colorado taxes for that?
Have a property in Colorado.
They own a California LLC.
Right.
They own a property and they have a California LLC that owns Colorado rental real estate.
Yeah, you do.
Anywhere that you have rental real estate, I guess here.
Yeah, you've brought that property into California.
Mm-hmm. It is disregarded. Somebody says that. I don't know where that came from. Do I have to file a tax return for partnership in the state of California? Oh, now she says it's disregarded. The answer is no. You don't have to file it. If it's just a disregarded LLC, it's you.
So you have to file a Colorado return.
Yeah. Does a HELOC? Well, no, I was going back down to this one.
Which one?
There's a client that has an LLC that's disregarded. She said partnership. Then she says now it's disregarded up here. I was just matching them up. So it's a disregarded LLC. They have rental property. So they're just getting, it's just like having a rental in whatever it's called in Florida. Oh my goodness. So this is a good one. If an airplane A leaves New York heading west at 11 a.m. Eastern time and plane B leaves San Francisco at 6 a.m. PST, can I get an extension on filing for my corporation till October 15th, like a personal return? Tony, no, but if it is an S corp, you can get till September 15th. And if it's a C corp, it depends on what its tax year is.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a whole bunch of questions that were also emailed in. Did the step up basis survive? Yes. Also, on a sale of a private residence, the old rule was you had a $500,000 tax deduction. No, you have a capital gain exclusion. If a couple resided in the property 2 out of 5 years, that survived. So I won't get into the nitpickiness. Yes, it survived. How can an LLC set aside some of their profits for future use? Can an LLC use their profits for business travel without claiming it as a business deduction? So the answer is an LLC does not exist for tax purposes. So it depends on how it's ultimately taxed. Can it set aside its profits? The LLC does not have to distribute monies unless it's required to do so by its operating agreement. Usually we leave that up to a manager. Can the LLC use its profits for business travel without claiming it as a business deduction? Yeah, that's called just spending your profit, which is a personal expense, but I wouldn't do that. If it's business travel, I'd be writing it off, and I'd be writing it off more than likely through a corporation. Sorry, I'm hobarting all the questions again. Do I have to file taxes on my business if I'm just starting but have an EIN number? Jeff.
If you're a corporation or S corporation, you have to file a return.
Yep. I am responsible to file for 2018. My business started in September of 2018. I did not make any money. And my tax year end is June 2019. So I already know that that's a C corp or an LLC tax is a C corp because it has an off year end.
Yep.
And you would be paying tax, let's see, July, August, September 15th?
Yes.
All right. So you're going to have your taxes due in August, September 15th. And yes, you would file it because your tax year is not even done yet. You still got a little more time. You don't have to file now, though. So you can just breathe a big sigh of relief. Do you have any advice on how I can get as much money shifted over to my adult children, including help with health and education? They'll be working for me part time. Yeah. Make them full time, give them benefits and pay them the maximum amount of on the reasonable scale. Have an accountant tell you what's reasonable for what they're doing and pay them a whole bunch of money. Pay it on the high end. Jeff?
No, I'm good with that.
I like it when he gives me this look like,
what?
Yeah.
No, I didn't give him that look this time.
All right. I would like to know, as a real estate wholesaler, what percentage of each check should I set aside for taxes? I'm in Tennessee. So, Samantha, you have two things. First off, if you're a wholesaler, it's not really a percentage because your whole activity is going to be aggregated. So I would usually do this through an S corp. Or in Tennessee, you've got that bonds exclusion. Yeah, do you know what that is that you're holding there, Jeff?
No.
It's called an USIC, and anybody from Alaska right now is laughing their hand. Jeff is picking something up on my desk, and he's holding it, and he's looking at it, and it's an USIC. For those of you who knows what that is, then you guys can all chuckle. Somebody knows. A bunch of Alaskans out there. It's a fossil, but you don't want to know it up. All right. So
I was going to ask if I need to wash my hands.
Maybe. It depends. It's fossilized. I think it's clean at this point. All right. I have funny clients. They send me some funny stuff. All right. So as a real estate wholesaler, you're getting paid almost like you're basically getting paid active ordinary income. And I wouldn't put a percentage down. I'm going to try to get that to zero. In Tennessee, we have FONTS, so which is a fancy way of saying if you have a family-owned non-corporate entity. So this one, we'd have a corporate entity. So you have to worry about paying the Tennessee corporate tax. So we're going to want to get this thing to zero. If you have zero income, I mean, net profit, you have zero Tennessee tax, you have zero federal tax. So Samantha, we're going to work on getting you to zero. So how much do you have to put aside? None. We're going to make sure that we're getting it down. or we're going to pay it out to you in the form of a salary or something and defer it into a 401k. You should really come to Tax and Asset Protection and spend some time with us because we're going to change the way you think. All right. I have money taken out of my account for my granddaughter's college invested in mutual funds. Oh, stop doing that. How can I change it and use it as a write-off on my tax return? I'm also paying for my other granddaughter's college books and parking pass. What do I need to do to write this off? Oh, you're hurting my heart. All right, Sonia, here's what you're going to do. You need to make sure that they are a part of your business. You need to make sure they're doing something for your business. And so you're going to create a little family business and you're going to put them on the board. And you're going to say, hey, guys, you guys have to participate, even if they're young. There's cases on the books of people 9 years and younger getting paid, as long as they're able to do something of value. But you're going to want them to be part of your enterprise, and you're going to pay them. You either pay them as wages, or you're going to pay them as independent contractors. Jeff might have a take on that one. But it's much better to let them, if you pay them money, then they can pay all their college books. They can put their own money aside, like, for example, for the granddaughter, putting it away in the mutual fund. That's a complete scam. Mutual funds really do stink. Like, as far as things that I would invest in, it's way down there on the list because there's so many fees. And just statistically, you're going to make about 2% on those puppies. What I would be doing is putting it in a Roth IRA, but I would let your daughter, your granddaughter do it. So a granddaughter receives money, active income, puts it in a Roth IRA. Now, when they go to college, they can take that money out if needed, tax-free for the amount that you contributed. And if they take out the money that's over that, that has grown, as long as it's been in there for 5 years, how much tax? You don't have any penalty. You just pay tax on it.
Right.
So and at their tax rate, it's going to be zero. I did this with my daughter. She pays zero. So she's always below the standard deduction. So she just graduated. So
what do you think about the 529 plan, though?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it works in this case because it sounds like she's already in college. But young children, do you do the 529?
I don't do the. I hate the 529.
You hate the 529?
I just because every time I've done the numbers on this, and this is just me. I'm just telling you, I've had clients do this. They were literally thinking they were making 7%. And when they did the numbers, because remember, they don't have to, you're going to be ranting here in a second. What they actually have to disclose to you as fees are not what the actual fees are. Forbes did a great article on this. The average was between 4.8 and 5.8% is what a mutual fund costs.
Yeah.
And they're returning between 6 and 7%. They always say, oh, they're making so much money. The mutual funds take on average somewhere in the 70% of the growth range, which means you're getting less than one third of the growth. And if it's 6%, you're getting less than 2%. And that's the number that I see over and over again when I do the numbers. You're basically giving your money to somebody else and they're making it. It's not getting to where you need it. If you go above that 7%, you have somebody that's making 15%. Now you look like they look like a rock star, but they're still taking most of your money and you're 100% at risk.
Saying somebody is living in the Hamptons on your
yes
contributions to your children or grandchildren's funds.
Yes. There you go. Go to Infinity Investing. I have all the numbers broken down and I will give that to anybody who asks. If you want my course, it's 11-part course and we break it down. And I'm just telling you, it's not that all mutual funds are bad, just most of them. And if you're a CFP or somebody else, you're convince me otherwise, hire someone to manage an ETF account. That's much better. You might.
Yeah, I do 1%. Prefer the ETF accounts for the mutual funds.
Let them manage that. It's just way, way, way cheaper. But we're talking taxes here. All right. Is it best to file married joint if both spouses own the business?
Huh. If you're married.
Married filing jointly. So is it better to file married separately under some businesses?
Married filing separately almost never works out.
Yeah. I've seen it once.
There's a lot of built-in. You know where it used to work out is in Ohio because of their credit. State credit, it sometimes worked out better.
You're so much smarter than me on that stuff because I don't know. I think what you do is you run it both ways and say, in fact, a good taxpayer could run both ways. Like literally, they could run the return.
Yeah, we actually get a report that says if one way is better than the other.
Mm-hmm. All right. I heard the standard depreciation period for real estate investment property is 27 and a half years. Yes, that's the 1250 standard straight line deduction. Is it possible to accelerate this? Yes. It's called a cost segregation. What if I want to depreciate my investment over 20 years, 15 years instead? Well, we can all want things, John. You don't get to. No, what you do is you break the building down into pieces. So ordinarily, they look at it and they say, all right, this is for residential real estate, by the way. It's 27 and a half. If it's commercial, it's 37 years. 39. You're absolutely right. 39 years. So it's 27 and a half. So what you do is you take the improvement and the default is, let's say it's $300,000 building, 275 is the improved value. I know those numbers are crappy, but bear with me. That means $10,000 a year you're writing off, because you're going to take the 275 or 275,000 divided by 27 and a half. So you're going to have $10,000 a year. That's your depreciation. If you want to accelerate that, then you can't use just 1250 property. You have to break it down into its components. That's called a cost segregation, where you're segregating the property into not just the 1250 property, but also its pieces like the carpet, the paint, and the fixtures and everything else. And now you can write those off. Get this, if it's less than 20-year property, in the year, the 1 year, you get bonus depreciation. So what you see is really it's about a 20% of that. So let's just say you'd get about an extra $50,000 deduction in year one, under my example, on that $300,000 piece of property. That's about what you're going to get. And in order to take advantage of that, John, you're going to have to either have a lot of other rental income, or you're going to have either you or your spouse is going to have to be a real estate professional so you can offset it. So he's asking, there's more questions on that. Would cost segregation be beneficial for a lease hold build out? I don't think it's available for that, but for lease build out, like you could break certain parts down, like HVAC and carpet and stuff, if it's a building. And oh no, this is a bad question. This next one, some of it you'd be at a 179. Right. Somebody says, I'm selling a house that was my personal home. Okay. I rented it for 1.5 years, but I've never depreciated anything. What do I do?
We can fix that.
Yeah. Depreciation is a may, but you have to recognize the recapture no matter what. If you sell this and you've lived in it 2 out of the last 5 years, then you have an exclusion on the capital gains, not on the depreciation. So you always have to recognize the depreciation. So that kind of stinkolas. You didn't take it, but they still make you, they force feed you the recapture.
So we can actually do a change in accounting method, even in the year of sale, which kind
really?
Of surprises me.
And what does that mean?
What we do is we go back and say, oh, we should have depreciated this, and we didn't.
You grab it.
And we grab all that old depreciation in the current year.
And what that's going to do is basically offset your recapture.
Right.
Because you're going to write it off and recapture it in the same year. Recapture isn't horrible. It's capped at 25%, but it's whatever your tax bracket is, or 25%, whatever's lower. Here's one. And then we're going to have to get finished up. You guys know me. I'll say that for the next 15 minutes to half hour. I was keeping specific mileage for rental property. Our accountant said that unless I documented all personal miles as well, I could not count these miles. How do I have to keep records for rental property mileage?
Mileage IQ?
Yeah, use Mile IQ. So it's just Mile IQ. It's an app and it tracks everything. What your accountant really should be saying is that you need to track your odometer reading at the beginning of the year and then your business miles and your odometer at the end of the year. And then you could subtract off and say, this was my personal miles.
Correct.
So your accountant is being very mean to you. So Roseanne, I wouldn't fire them, but I would probably threaten to fire them.
Yeah, you don't have to say that you went to 7-Eleven on Saturday.
Yeah. All right. You don't have to do all that. So yeah, he was tracking. I have a Canadian investor hold a mortgage on US property. What are the tax consequences? So you're paying a Canadian investor interest, and assuming that they're in Canada, yeah, you probably have if they have a business here, I think you're okay. If they don't, then I think you're doing what you have to withhold, isn't it? 28%.
Yeah, that might be 15%. Don't quote me, but it might be 15% under the treaty.
I think it's a smaller amount because it's interest.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think dividends and interest come under the 15% for Canadians.
But Tracy, the answer is yes, you're going to have to withhold unless they can show that they have a presence here. Wow, look at all these questions that came in. You guys are killing me. I'm going to just start busting through these quickly, and just because I love to try to answer all of them. I think I heard you recommend paying 3 years of charitable deductions every 3 years rather than 1 year's worth annually. Following TaxWise recommendations last year, I paid 2018 and 2019 deductions in 2018. Do I need to donate every 3 years or just 2 years worth? It's up to you. It's what I care about is, let's just say I'm making $100,000 and I tithe $10,000 of it. I have to exceed, and let's say I'm married filing jointly, I'd have to exceed $24,000 of all my Schedule A. So that means my mortgage interest, my state real estate tax, what other things, if I have any medical expenses. I know I'm missing.
Yeah,
something.
If I live in a non-taxing state,
it's going to be so tough. I have to exceed that before I get a dollar.
Even with that $10,000 contribution,
yep,
you're not going to hit the 24 grand.
And so what I look at is then there's no tax incentive for me to give to charity. But if I double it up, let's say I gave 20,000 and now everything exceeds that to where it exceeds the 24. Maybe I'm at 30,000 now, where I would have been at 20,000. I would have gotten zero benefit. Now I'm at least getting a $6,000 deduction. And all I did is pay the same amount, but I just paid it in a different sense. So, Gene, I hope that helps. You're probably fine. I just have to look at the numbers to know exactly. We could come up with something.
And I like when you do that, that you're letting the people you're donating to, let them know that you're doing that, because it helps with their budgeting and such.
Well, here's a good one. If I am paying fees to a Canadian citizen that lives and works in Canada, do I need to withhold U.S. tax from the payments? Ooh. Well, if you're paying a Canadian citizen, like, that's kind of weird. You must be paying them as a contractor. Then you'd have withholding, 28%, I believe, unless they have a business presence here. But
This may be a case that the withholding doesn't apply if they are doing all of their work in Canada. They have no U.S. presence.
Oh.
So I know you don't have to 1099 them in that case. And I want to say that you may not have to withhold on them either.
John, email that in. Let's have somebody actually pull that one for you. So if you're not a platinum, be a platinum. If not, that one's pretty quick. And we have some Canadian counterparts that we could throw it at. Is there any possibility to talk about increasing the salt limit of $10,000? Yes, they keep talking about it. Will they do it? We'll see. My spouse is getting a 1099, but I believe she is an employee. Should I file separately? If she's getting a 1099, then she's an independent contractor, at least tax-wise. And that's a problem if you believe she's an employee, because they're not paying half of it. Usually depreciation is taken on 80% of the purchase price. If the property is a condo, can I use 100% of its price where I technically don't own the land?
No.
Yeah, no.
The courts have decided that you do technically own part of the land.
So nice thinking. You're thinking tax-wise, Will, but no.
It's not going to be 20% though.
It's not. It's going to be a portion, and it's going to be a lot less than 20%. Do they give you how do they do that? You use assessed land value?
Yeah, and divide it up between who owns what. And it's probably going to be a lot closer to between 5 and 10%.
Yeah, you're still, you're thinking right though. Would cost, let's see, can you convert a 529 to another better plan like a self-directed IRA? I don't think you can convert a 529 plan, but I don't know the answer. Jeff, do you know?
No, as far as I know, the only way to get money out of a 529 is either for education or it's taxable to whoever it's distributed to. At least the gains are taxable. Let me rephrase that.
You know which Forbes article? I can send it to you, Lane, if you want to email me. So email in saying I'm looking for the Forbes article that Toby was talking about. I have it as a link somewhere. In fact, I actually got that. I stole that from a CFP, and they have to document everything that they say. So that's why I like, So I just stole it. I could find it for you pretty quick.
Hey, one thing real quick on the 529 plan. Mm-hmm. Say your kid doesn't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. You can always change the beneficiary.
Yeah.
There we are.
All right. I want to set up a Roth for my retired brother. He only has Social Security income. Can I legitimately pay him earned income so he can set up a Roth? Your business would have to pay him, Kevin, and you want to make sure that you don't cost him any of his Social Security. I think that they have a very small amount of money that they can make. So you got to be very careful, and he actually has to provide services. So if it's
I want to say that number was around $18,000 of earned income.
Yes. I have almost $160,000 in my retirement fund. Can I use that money? How can I use that money? I've already taken out $50,000 as a loan. You can use that for any investment that's allowed by the plan. So if you have it in a solo 401k, you can invest in just about anything.
And you're talking about the plan actually doing the investing.
Yeah, the plan would be doing it's really up to the plan. So what you see a lot of people do is they set up an IRA at TD Ameritrade. And then let's say you're at TD Ameritrade. They're going to say you can only invest in our stuff in securities. They're not going to let you buy real estate in it. But so you'd have to do a self-directed IRA. Or if it's a 401k, usually your own trustee on those. Can you avoid paying the Social Security tax on wages paid to young kids and grandkids?
I don't think so.
No, you're still going to pay that. You're absolutely going to pay that. But keep in mind, it goes towards their quarterly total. In other words, they're still going to get a piece of that. So even if you have Social Security, I always look at it like I hate Social Security on profits on a business. But I like Social Security as far as, hey, if you're paying in, you're probably going to get it back anyway.
Yeah, there's a couple items you can avoid, like unemployment, workers' compensation, but
yep.
Social Security and Medicare, no.
Let's see, Toby, what a great thing to have at your desk. Watch their face when you tell them biology. Kim, that's horrible. So she knows what an USIC is. All right, I paid for the TaxWise workshop, but wasn't able to watch it and would like to take advantage of the 3-for-1 offer. How do I get it? Just email me. Email in to the, or you can go to that little offer there, but she wants to convert it. She probably already did it. Just email in. We'll take care of you. I left an employer and rolled my pension over to a traditional IRA account, and they sent me a disbursement form. Doesn't that make you just go freaky? is that double taxation? No. So what you're doing is, it used to be 15A and 15B. It says, here's how much you received on that 1099-R. And then you say, how much of it is taxable? You put zero. So still on the new tax form, I'm sure they have something similar. You're not going to pay tax on that. So yes, they give it to you and they sent you the distribution form. They're just letting the IRS know that they rolled it to you, and you're going to say how much of that stayed with you versus went to another qualified plan. So you're going to say, hey, there's zero tax on it. So you're not going to get taxed on it. So you don't have to worry. My apology, formed an LLC in Wyoming, taxes of partnership, no activities. Do I still need to file the LLC, no activities or expenses? If you had no activities or expenses on a partnership, I'd still file it because there's penalties for not filing it. But you're going to have a zero activity. Just put a big old zero on there. But I think that's almost impossible to have zero expenses on formation.
Once you start filing, you don't want to skip yours either.
Yep. All right. If we have the opportunity zone list, what is the next step? So if you're going to invest in the opportunity zone, then you set up a qualified opportunity fund and you buy the qualified opportunity property. The fund is really simple. It's an LLC, taxes of partnership 99% of the time. We put a little bit of language in there and we file the opportunity zone statement when we file its first tax return. So, and then you just make sure you're investing in it and you get to say how much you're deferring. If I receive income from leasing my farm in Illinois, from the farmer who pays me based on a formula based upon, so it's a sharecropper, can I take advantage of the new business income deduction, the 20% off?
Yeah, I believe the lease, the farm leases is also qualifies for that.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, there was something else. There was, gosh bless it, there was some co-op stuff too. There was some other language that were even more beneficial. But yes, you should get that. Let's see. My LLC owns a USPS mailbox. Can my other LLCs or me personally use it? Well, you don't own a USPC. You're leasing it. So yes, you could have other people on it too, but you probably have to let the US Postal Service know that you have other names on it.
Right.
I've had a 501c3 since 2002 as a ministry. I've worked in real estate doing flips, but I've never used my nonprofit to do real estate housing projects. I'm considering using my nonprofit to do some housing profits. Can I fund my nonprofit projects from my for-profit corp and get tax deductions in the process? Is there a conflict of interest? So one, you want to keep it separate from your ministry. And yes, you can fund nonprofit projects and give it to it, depending on whether it comports with your ministry. That's the biggest thing, is we have to make sure that we're within lines with what you set up your ministry to do. If it furthers your purpose, which it's going to be really difficult to say flipping property furthers my purpose. What you'd probably be doing is a for-profit flip, make money, donate it. So it pays you out and then you're donating it. The only problem we have is you have a 60% adjusted gross income limitation to how much you can give.
Well, and he's talking about doing it from the corporation, which has a 5% limit.
Is it 5 or 10 now?
They reduced it from 10 to 5.
Yeah. So you never really want to give money to a charity unless it's an S corp, in which case it flows to you. But if it's a for-profit S corp, then you would get it's a personal tax deduction. So I hope that helps. One is you wouldn't do it inside the ministry, but you could certainly do it outside and give the money away. And that is not a conflict of interest. My wife and I are 60 years old, close to retirement, make six-figure income. We're a little late in the game, but we need to invest in something that will offset $14,000 of federal tax that's being withheld. We have a HELOC on our personal residence. What is the best strategy to use for resources? Kevin, you sound like a perfect candidate for Infinity Investing. And we use the Yale model for allocation, which is about is a 30-30-30-10 for what you have. It would be about 60,000 into income producing stocks and learn to write options on it, and $60,000 in real estate and $60,000 in a managed fund. But I would get into Infinity Investing and have make sure you have a group that's supporting you. It's free. So you can come on to Infinity Investing and see everything I just talked about. It's free. It's 11-part series. Again, just ask them for the links on it, and I'd be happy to give that to anybody. And just as a personal note, that's one I just went to Hawaii and gave it at the Hawaii Convention Center today with a really great group there. I love watching young people dive into this stuff. And it's amazing when they start off young how easy they have of it. You'll be mad in about 30 years when you're looking at them going, man, you're way ahead where I was. So no, you won't be mad. You'll be actually feeling pretty proud. I have personally loaned money to my C corp that has not been paid back, and the C corp goes out of business. Can I deduct the personal loan and offset the loss? All right, so here it goes. So This is somebody who loaned money to their C corp, and if it's an individual and it's $50,000 or less, you contribute it to the C corp in exchange for shares. Dissolve the C corp, or the C corp goes out of business. Yes, you could write it off against your active income. If you're married, you go up to $100,000.
If it's more than that, you write the rest off as capital losses.
Yeah, so you're going to get the loss. Period. It's whether you get to offset all of your personal income. So Jeff's absolutely right. If you go above that, you still get to write it off. The $250,000, do I have to file a form? That was on a qualified retirement plan. Somebody's saying, is that for the C Corp? No, C Corp has to file, period, whether you make a dollar or $10 million. Can I sell my SUV to my LLC and write it off? Thank you. I wouldn't, because you'd have income, right? You might want to contribute it, depending on how heavy it is. Actually, I saw an article on this one. Lisa, email that in. I may have something that's relevant on it. I was reading it was Bradford that did something goofy about selling a something to your, you may have been contributing it, but.
Yeah, I'm not really crazy about the selling it to it. I'd rather contribute.
But it's got to be more than 50% used for business. So just so I'll use that as a big thing.
And if it's not at least 6,000 pounds, it's probably not worth it.
Yep. Explain what TAPS is. I don't know what that is. TAPS. And do we have to participate in our own states to pay taxes if we have a C corp? Certain, exactly. It must stand for something that I'm just blanking on it. Do you know what it is?
I cannot honestly recall.
Oh, somebody is making fun of the fact that we're going over again. Oh my gosh. Is it 4:30? All right.
It's 4:30.
Bad, Toby. All right. So we're going to have to figure out what TAPS is. Email that in. We'll figure it out. We're going to figure out what it is. Sometimes we have all these acronyms floating around, and it's just not hitting me. Better question. What's the best way to hold multiple assets, homes, without creating a million LLCs? And should I consider setting up in a different state other than where I reside? Well, Tori, if you're in Texas, you have something called a series LLC. So if that's where you invest and you're doing a whole ton of them, then that may be something we look at. They're just not my favorite right now because we don't have a ton of law on them. But in certain circumstances, I have one client that's got 400 some odd properties. Yeah, I don't want to really set one up for everyone. And in that particular case, we might do some other things. All right. Email in your questions, guys. We're going to have to cut it off here. I actually have to go run on a plane. So I'm being really late.
I was going to tell you about,
No, just let me keep going. Blah, 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 blah. All right. See you guys soon. For those of you guys who'd like to come here and hang out with us. Oh, I see what this one is. That's TAPS is a charity. So yeah, email that on in. That's fantastic. Thank you for pointing that out. And we'll get into that. Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, but I don't know how that would apply to court. Again,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to look at that. It's not triggering something in my head as far as tax benefits. So anyway. Guys, next time, in a 501c3, same as a charitable trust? No, but it's a beneficiary of a charitable trust. Until next time, I had to throw one in there.
So 434.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.